This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. Visual artist Dmitri Wright has the world on a string right now. His exhibition of new works is currently being shown at the Alex Trimper Gallery in Greenwich, Connecticut. When you walk into the gallery, you are swept away by the joy and rapture in Dmitri's work. We are invited in to a dizzying world of nature and the depth and mystery of the sky at night. Dmitri Wright is a master artist and instructor at the Weir Farm National Park, the only park dedicated to American Impressionism. His plein air workshops are extremely popular. His art hangs in private collections around the world, from the U.S. to Asia. His work is a testament to the music that inspires him. With soaring musical arcs, his paintings represent light through color, and his legacy as an Impressionist is left indelibly in our souls. Dmitri and I sat together at the Trimper Gallery, surrounded by his art, speaking about his work and philosophy. It was, as always, a revelatory hour that was spent with him. Last week in part one of this interview, we discussed his process with regard to his deeply personal commitment. And today we carry on with the magic of the fine art and spiritual philosophy of Dmitri Wright. And of course, you can find the complete filmed version of this conversation at centerstagewithpamelakuhn.com.
With the more hierarchical approach, you have a target and you can see whether you're moving towards it or away from it. With the more expressive forms, you could be 90% on, and in the last 5 minutes, that 10% could totally dislodge and undo everything you've done.
Exactly.
But yet there are some people, they would not work any other way. And so they could have a good day, a good week, a good year, and then later have a bad day, a bad week, a bad year. But that's part the cost of doing business if you're going to paint that way. If you have more design skills, more that hierarchical gold standard things you know that work, is you're almost like a rock climber, or you have resting areas where you can kind of chill for a while. Mm-hmm. You have provisions and mm-hmm. things, and where you can go, as opposed to going flat out with one go.
Well, let's talk about your process.
Yeah.
Because I know you're a deeply spiritual person. We've talked about this before. I mm-hmm. adore it. Mm-hmm. You use music yeah. as a form of inspiration for yourself. You use prayer.
Yeah.
What is a typical day like in mm-hmm. the life of Dmitri Wright? When you go to the canvas, mm-hmm. you have a new work in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is your day like? What is the structure?
Yeah, I do a systems check.
Like a car.
Yes. Yeah, that's what's cool about the modern cars. The computer will tell you what's going on inside, and you just call up diagnostics is there. So now that I'm older, a lot of times my body, and I see it like an instrument, is mm-hmm. just out of tune. Mm-hmm. So I get up, I'm stiff, my back is out. I might be all swollen and tight. I might have to take an Advil. Mm-hmm. We have to go for a walk first. Okay, all these type of things. So that's just the body. But what about the mind?
Yeah.
Well, let's say that my brain is an array of cats and dogs that are not getting along with one another. That's not good. So coming to some sort of a center or rest, that requires work. I call that front-end loading.
Okay.
So scripture has a way of doing that. So having a morning ritual, I like to listen to the Lord's, the morning prayers. That's very, very helpful. Of course, reading scripture, that helps. So that gives you something to think about. So when you have this kind of I and thou sort of approach, mm-hmm. you know, the cross, so it's up and down, but also a cross, which is reaching side to side, brother and sister. So that puts that sort of perspective, and that cuts down the noise of all the other
right.
things. They're still there, but it just puts them into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I love getting up early, and during the winter months, of course, things are dark and cold. So I might walk into the studio, I'll put on a candle, I'll put on Lourdes, and I'll have the singing or chants or something like that, and I'll do the morning prayers. And I'm watching as the sun is rising and the candle is losing its star-like glow. I'm looking where the painting is, and I can start to see it reveal itself. But within the candlelight, I'm looking at this star, and I'm listening to the Word of God, and I'm looking up. I have a cross high up on the ceiling, and I see that. So that's where my triangulation is.
Okay.
Then as the light comes in, that's what's a drop, and I've internalized that more. And then I start to look, and then the painting reveals itself to me.
Oh, that's so fascinating.
Yeah, so it works beautifully. There are times when I'm in the zone, let's say I can't sleep, mm-hmm. I can just walk in the studio 3 o'clock in the morning, a difficult area, grab the brush, bing, 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 yeah, that's it, then go back to sleep. That's great. So that looking, seeing, insight, visionary, inspired. So that's when I'm on an inspired level. Let's say I'm inspired, but my body's saying it ain't happening. Mm-hmm. So that means I have to be responsible, response-able. And since I am an instrument, my arm is tight. I have to stretch out my arm, you know, right. Finger, wrist, arm exercises. And I know that through doing a body scan. I have a mat that I lay down on. And if I stretch back all the way, when I'm tense, my arms will actually stay in the air like that, because that shows how the muscle groups are. And gravity will start to push it down. So I have to be very patient for that to happen. And then once I'm completely relaxed and I do the breathing, one is the Navy SEAL box breathing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. One, two, three, four, five. You know, so very, very slow. The prayer, systems check on the body, all these things. I can feel it. Let's do this. Sometimes I'll skip breakfast. A lot of times I need it. I like another Covey quote would be, have you ever been too busy driving to get gas?
Right.
So I might go into the studio and you turn the key in the car. And so, oh, geez. I have to eat. I have to make my own food.
Just these little things.
Little things.
That are so important.
And then other things, like maybe I'm going and then my wife will call and said, you have to take out the garbage.
Right.
And I get this, can't you see I'm working?
Right. Yeah. But this is life.
So that's mixed in there too with all the other responsibilities of paying bills and so forth. Covey speaks again about the maintenance habit being very important. So we have to make sure that that is baked into our creative process, that we take care of all the things that need to be taken care of, so that when you do hit that kind of spiritual sort of state, you could rest that your house is in order.
Mm-hmm. So that everything else will follow through. But
yeah.
Yet so many of us don't do that.
I know,
and
it's hard.
We don't take that personal inventory, or we give it away to others.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah. A certain amount of that is good, because that frees you up, because Kobe also speaks about staying in quadrant two. That's where you're the most effective.
Right.
So but when you're doing how you are made and what you're supposed to do, and you can delegate that off to someone else, mm-hmm. that's good for them, everybody is happy.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Everything you've just spoken about mm-hmm. is reflective in the life of a singer as well.
Yes.
And yeah. One word you used, which I really relate to, is gravity.
Mm.
Because really everything you've just talked about, and with the help of Stephen Covey, is keeping us centered.
Yes.
So it's from there that the truth comes, right,
yes.
Dimitri?
Yeah. Centering helps you to work from a space that's sound, and you know where you're at. Things are not floating away, or things are not obfuscated, or things are not disruptive, so that wrecks beauty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, beauty has two sisters, goodness and truth.
Mm.
So it's got to be the three in order for it to work. And try not to fool yourself, especially when you're asking for the highest level of the art form. You know what it looks like and you know how it feels.
Right.
And so to try to gaslight yourself or anyone else, that's not good.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
You know, I've got to tell you just my own feeling of sitting here right now with this jubilant sense of color.
Mm-hmm.
That there is some sort of celebration here, I feel, in your spirit that has jumped onto the canvas. You know, I'm looking at the birds here at night, and I know how you feel about walking your property.
Oh yes.
At night and being married to the night sky.
Yes, yeah.
It's jubilation that I feel here, and the colors, it's like this spring of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm hearing in my head Vivaldi's Four Seasons arranged by Max Richter, which has given it another depth.
Yes.
And because we're literally, that's my interpretation right now, just looking at your work.
Mm-hmm.
We're being guided through the various stages of life in seasons. And
yes, my work is very much about the seasons of life.
And nature.
Yes, because with the daffodils, along with the olive trees, the apple trees, they're all metaphors for ideas which are far more interesting, subtle, and complex. So my journey with the daffodils at Weir Farm was partially based upon the poem Daffodils. I'm going to remember the guy's name who wrote it. Well, anyhow.
English poet.
Yeah, English poet. Gorgeous poet. To see these flowers at the end of winter vaulting through snow and ice.
Yes. When
it seems impossible. And I see the malevolence of somebody crushing them. But yet they are there as specters for us to have hope and joy. I remember one time I was at Weir Farm. I spent a week there doing portraits. I was down on my knees making sketches and studies of them so I could really get into the inside of what's there, because I'm fascinated by that much bigger idea, which is, William Wordsworth, yes. Yeah, Jeremy Irons did a beautiful rendition of the poem. It's one of
The daffodils.
On daffodils. It just sends me. So the daffodils, they stand for that. And I'm saying if I had to stay outside with them under these conditions, I would die. But they are fine. And so, but through that, I learned about dangerous beauty.
Oh.
Okay? I love tigers and big cats and things. It's one thing to look into their eye at a zoo, but to stand face to face in the wild, that's something else. They're so powerful and so beautiful at the same time.
And have you done that?
I've never been in front of a real... But I have had cats, and you see the beast in them.
Yeah, of course you do.
And I've had dogs, and especially when they go crazy and they want to play and all that. It's just great fun when you get a chance to take a fractal of that world, you know, the wildness. Mm-hmm. But the daffodils, when you get down on their level, they look like little lions to me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember there was one particular experience where the ground was still frozen and my knees were killing me because the cold, no matter how much physical strength I had, was the heat was being drawn out of my body due to the cold of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the sun was so hot, I felt as if I'm being microwaved from the top and frozen from the bottom.
Right.
And that's what produced this painting over here. And that's what produced the whole series of the daffodils, was those sensations. The apple trees are important because when you look at the trunks, they look tortured. in the most cruel sort of way, but yet they give to us, they feed us, they put out an incredible, glorious crown of light and color, fragile but yet strong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, under these the weather conditions that would harm us, we have to be sheltered. They're out there in it and going through cycle, and then they make apples. And so in Europe, I had the same sensation with olive trees. Again, you look at their trunks, they're almost nightmarish. I think they're more hideous than an apple tree trunk, but yet the crown is glistening and soft and sensitive. And of course, the olives. I love olive oil. When I have that in my system, I actually feel better. I function better. It's almost like the same way that a car needs, you know,
of
oil
course.
In order
it's your
to
sustenance.
Yes.
But here again is the paradox of art.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, dangerous beauty.
Yeah.
The apple tree, which looks so tortured, but yet yeah. reveals great sustenance.
Yes.
And well, the olive wood, when polished, is so beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think of the olive wood. Yeah.
It's so divine.
That is true.
Just like the olives themselves.
Yes.
So rich.
Same thing with this iris painting here. One of my students gave me an iris from her garden. She's like a world-class gardener. And I was so taken by it. And it's so beautiful, but yet the clock is ticking. And so I did my private lessons. The thing is sitting in my car. I got into the studio. I'm tired. And it's passing. But it's beautiful, and it says, I'm going to do it. It's all right. The suffering that I'm going through because I'm tired is almost equivalent to what the flower is going. It's offering itself for this moment. It's here at this particular time in this moment to be appreciated. There's goodness, there's beauty, and there's truth. So why don't I follow the same thing? So there's a video of me doing sketches, studies, preliminaries, then doing a full sketch, and then going onto canvas and drawing the flower out first and having no idea how the rest of the piece is going to look. So in faith, because I had that pearl of great price, that was enough to stimulate in faith a journey into the unknown. So this piece is filled with unknown knowns. This is a fact. But this, I have no idea, but based upon the fact, this is how it should go. And these are the things which are there. So the things which are beautiful is one thing. The things that I'm not too sure about become specters. And how will they reveal themselves? And so now there's a fear element. And so there's a drama. So we watch a good opera, a good play, or whatever it is,
the friction.
Friction. I love Shakespeare's sonnets. You get that, these rhythms and the things that are just gorgeous. Bach, the fugue, John Coltrane.
Yes.
How they would get into trouble. He says, wait a second, this passage is going, how they're going to get like that? It's going to fail. And then they jump to another thing.
That's right.
Like
That's
children right. playing a game on how, because when you're an adult playing with children, you got to be able to follow that logic. You can't take the adult logic and says, how does a polo bear become a candy cane? Or how does this turn into that? Come on, Dad, get with it.
But it is possible.
But it is possible. And I think the great art forms do that, and they give us hope because it's not the end. Sometimes it's only the end of the beginning of the end, what have you. We invert. Transfer, flip around, do all mm-hmm. kinds of things. It's play.
It is
and
play.
And play is one of the highest forms of intelligence. So I think that's why we like looking at it.
And ironically, I think in the middle of all of that is the transformative act.
Yes.
How often do you...
That's good, yeah.
Are you really conscious of that? Of transformation within your process?
Well, I think that's brilliant what you just said, because it's not so much what the art is, it's what the art makes you become.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I have to change in order to get that result. If I stay static in some sort of preconceived, naive element, that's lower than what beauty will call for. Beauty demands a response.
Oh,
that's
wow.
One thing. I mean, when you are taken away by it, it will change you. And if you decide that you're now going to play along with it, oh my. Oh my.
That is incredible. Beauty demands a response. I'm going to walk away from this interview with that.
Okay.
Dimitri, that's fantastic. Are you proud of this?
Yeah. Again, like that athlete, you ever see the people that make it over the finish line and they have a look on their face of, thank God it's over, yet joy, but their body's not quite working right? Mm-hmm. Well, my brain is like that now. Now, this week for Thanksgiving, I'm off from teaching. And my studio looks like a bomb went off in there because I had to triple time to make all these things happen. Now relatives will be coming in. So do I have enough strength to kind of get that organized and get the house ready and all these things for the holidays and when the season picks back up again? So that's what I'm thinking of. I think real professionals, they'll take a pause to appreciate it for a moment, but they get right back on the saddle and they continue to ride.
Wow. I think you're absolutely right, Dimitri. And if you find that sense of play in the reorganization and prepping the house, you'll be just fine.
Thank you.
And everyone will benefit.
Thank you.
Love this. Yeah. Well, once again, this has been an incredible conversation.
Thank you.
Incredible.
I enjoy talking with you and being with you, and the insights that you have about art is quite inspiring. It goes into my creative process.
I'm so pleased to hear that.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to walk away with so many gems today of reality. Put into your prose. And but just for fun.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
If you had an opportunity to have one dinner one evening with anyone who has passed from this earth. Now, this can be more than one person if you like.
Okay.
But if you could sit at a table, and here we are talking about the visceral aspect of art and nurturing ourselves and eating the apples, all of these things.
Oh, yeah.
If you choose, who you choose means something at this table.
Sure.
Who would it be for one evening?
I think it would be an incredible dinner party to have Johann Sebastian Bach.
Oh, yes.
Frederick Douglass. Pope John II, Saint Pope John II, and I'm thinking, and Saint Francis, Helen Frankenthaler.
Wow.
I see a dinner party, the same way when you had that gathering of creatives.
We had our Benjamin Franklin dinner.
Yes.
Where we put concepts and ideas out into the table, answering
two questions. Benjamin Franklin and Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah, that would be a really cool
dinner
party.
Now, there you go, right there. I want to see those two together.
And maybe Alex also. Have him be the narrator for the group.
That would be incredible. Do you think it would be fun? Do you think it would be tumultuous?
I think it would be all those things. It would really be all those things. But perhaps that's what heaven is like.
I think so.
I once heard this story about heaven, that when you get there, one of the first things that happen is all the pets that you've ever had will kind of like greet
come
you. Could you imagine an attack and you being licked and whatever and stuff, and then relatives and all that. So that's cool.
That is the
nice
wondrous
thought.
Part.
Yeah. Wonder. We need wonder.
I love, absolutely. A sense of wonder means everything.
Yes.
It's right up there as most holy with play.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I find artists that have burnout and creative block somehow along the way, that got lost.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just didn't pay the bills enough.
That will do it too.
That real aspect of life.
Yes.
Okay, I want to come to that dinner party.
Okay.
I mean, seriously. And then lastly, is there one word or phrase that really defines who you are from the depth of your soul?
Hmm. I think the operative word is the transcendent, because there's a significant amount of mystery there.
Yeah.
And the man that I was years ago before, I'm a double cancer survivor. That's one thing, and a journey through that. And I learned a lot of incredible things as a result. And once I heard the statement, the heart is perfected through trials. Yeah, mm-hmm. I learned a lot from that. And I think I have a lot more to learn. And that has affected my work. That's affected my life. And so transcendent, I think, would be the operative word.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think we found that before. Mm-hmm. I think your transcendence will carry on mm-hmm. to a new level
yeah.
in the years coming. And I can't wait to be a part of that, Dimitri.
Thank you.
This has been unbelievable. Unbelievable. Thank you for sharing. It's always so profound. I love it. You know, I want to say to everyone, don't miss this opportunity to come to Alex Trimper's gallery in Greenwich, Connecticut on Boston Post Road. You can't miss this. You cannot miss this wondrous exhibition by this fabulous artist.
Thank you.
And perhaps you might be able to feel transcendence yourself in some way. And I think Dimitri would be happy with that, right?
Yes, I would. That's what it's all about.
And how can we find more about you? At DimitriWright.com?
Yes. www.DimitriWright.com.
I can't wait. To all my listeners, I hope you'll also go to centerstagewithpamelacoon.com or catch me at WGCH Talk Radio in Greenwich, Connecticut. And that's WGCH.com. And all I can say is that I think we stopped time for an hour.
Mm.
And I like that.
That's cool.
I like that. I'm going to look forward to that dinner. So thank you, Dimitri Wright. Thank you, Alex Trimper. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chris Jones, our engineer here today. And thank you to all this marvelous, transformative artwork. To all my listeners, stay safe out there. This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.